The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly. This week,
we do find like people coming to our shows just to start with me as well.
Oh yeah.
They basically said all over the internet they're going to come and find me and stab me. All of my heroes, I imagine, got all this. You know, Morrissey must have got way worse.
Brother, they're lovers, not haters, and they tell Michael Hann all about it. Plus, we hear new music from Fleet Foxes, Danger Mouse with Danielle Lupi and Nora Jones, and Austra. That's this week's Music Weekly from The Guardian. Happy Easter, one and all. This is our Music Weekly Easter special. Special in that it's actually in no way different from any of our other programmes, but it is taking place at Easter. Of course, the special thing about the programme is our guests. In this studio this week, we have Jude Rogers. Hello, Jude.
Hello.
And Rebecca Nicholson.
Hello.
Hello. That's a bit deep.
Sounds slightly suspicious. As if you How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good.
You're
thanks.
Well?
Yeah.
Excellent. You are newly appointed at the Guardian Guide.
I am, yes. I've got an actual job.
Fantastic. Is that totally amazing? So how come you're not away on Easter holidays like everybody else appears to be in the Guardian offices? It's like tumbleweed out there.
No, you've got to get the issue out, though. I think that's what I'm learning after many years of being a freelancer, that when you've got a job, there are things to do.
Dedication, that's what you need, as a broadcaster would say. OK, well, look, we'll hear your music choices later, but we're going to begin with Brother. The four-piece from Slough have been making waves recently with some lofty claims and comments about being the best band since Oasis, or certainly the best guitar band since Oasis. That's earned them a comparison with the Gallaghers in the process, which I suppose is what they wanted. It's also earned them an enormous backlash, sort of almost before they did anything, really. They've made the front of the NME, the pages of the Sun. Following an appearance at South by Southwest, they had a glowing review from the New York Times. We asked Michael Hann if we would speak to Lee and Sam from the band and find out whether Brother were all bluster.
What burned the kitchen down? You told me, ooh, we gotta get this right now. Whoa, you try to shut me up. I told you, ooh.
It's been really interesting, actually, over the last 6 months since I met you in Slough, the home of the brave. The way reactions to you have been so polarised.
Yeah.
I mean, especially the way so many people seem to decide to hate you without actually having heard you or knowing anything about you.
Yeah.
Why do you think people hate you so much?
I think it's understandable. Completely. I think I'm hateable and have a punchable face, but it's not my fault. At least we're being honest about it. I think that when bands like us, there aren't many of anymore, it seems, are as direct as we are and as honest as we are, it's a bit too intense for people. And they're just not used to it. They haven't had it for so long. I just don't think they're used to it.
Had you been expecting that kind of reaction, Sam?
Yeah, I think so.
Had you warned your families, or your family's not the kind of families who read The Quietus and Drowned in Sound? And
I don't think there's many families that read The Quietus.
My mother's got a collection of every interview that we did on the coffee table in our house. And every time she reads one, she sends me a text saying how funny it was. So I think she likes it.
When we did the cover for NME, obviously that was the thing that really sort of started riling people up, because I went out on a limb and, like, I said I didn't like Mumford & Sons, you know, for instance. And,
which isn't a controversial opinion in the music.
Well, no, of course not. You know, I don't think any of my opinions were controversial. They were just controversial because I made them public. But, like, Mumford & Sons, for instance, came back at me and said, you know, fair enough, you think we're a parody of ourselves, but we've sold 2 million records, so come back when you sell 2 million records. I was like, fair enough, good response. And I bloody will.
And were you surprised when people started digging through your past? I mean, suddenly it was, oh, well, they used to be in bands before.
Yeah.
As if there are any musicians who haven't been in bands before.
People wanted to trip us up because we were so sure of ourselves, you know, which is fair enough. I expected that as well. So I'm not embarrassed by anything. I'll happily talk about it, but it's not where I'm at anymore. I'm quite a bit older. Not necessarily wiser, though.
Now, by my reckoning, you're now almost on a par with Thousand Yard Stare as the most famous band ever to come out of Slough.
Yeah.
I suppose it's a case for Soul Family Sensation, maybe. Why has Slough been such a musical wasteland?
I don't think the sort of people there tend to be willing to become cultured, in a way. I think they're quite happy to live their lives the way everyone around them is living their lives.
It's a working town, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
It's just an industrial town. There's no creativity there, really.
Well, I'm not... not necessarily no creativity there, but it seems as soon as someone gets a hold of something that is working for them, they move out of it. But I'm not.
You're
gonna...
so close to London, aren't you?
Exactly. Well, that's it. Yeah, I'm not going to badmouth them because there's a lot of good people there.
But is it even Slough seemed to become a stick to beat when people? I remember reading a blog post somewhere or someone saying, "Oh, they're not even from Slough; they're really from Reading." As if saying if you're from Slough is going to bring you some kind of exciting credibility.
This is what's
trying to show off.
Now, when we met 6 months ago, you told me you were the kind of band who could headline Glastonbury and the vaccines weren't. Now, I'm not trying to start a band war here, but I saw the vaccines again the other night in front of a sold-out crowd who knew every word and were throwing beer around like they were trying to irrigate the electric forum. Do you think your dismissal of them and maybe some of your other rivals has been a bit rash?
No. I don't have a problem with the vaccines whatsoever. In fact, we met them... recently.
You had a drink with them in that Dallas airport, actually. They were really nice fellas.
I was saying that we're the sort of band that would have the songs to play in front of those big crowds. I'm not saying that they're not going to have a diehard fan base. I'm sure they will. But, I mean, I've never really looked at it through their eyes. For me personally, that's not something I could fathom.
Do you find reactions to you are different when you're playing outside London? I mean, what's the difference in crowds, say, in the north to when you're playing down here?
They're more...
lively, I'd say.
Well, yeah, they're lively, but they seem to be more obsessive over you. You know, they seem to know everything about you, your name, where you came from, and they seem to be there for the right reasons, where I think sometimes in London you can fall into that trap where you're just there to be seen. You know, people go to the shows because they're there to be seen.
I was interested, your publisher, after you played the Met Bar gig, I met the guy who signed you for publishing, who was saying... you shouldn't listen to what people say in London because this is a band that is going to sell in the provinces. That's where their audience is. They're not a metropolitan band at all. I mean, is that something that you consciously set yourself up as to think, well, how do we appeal to the greatest number of people by looking outside the capital?
Oh, I don't think so. When we first played our headline show in Manchester, I was really scared. But in fact, it went really well. And someone actually jumped on the stage and... in true Morrissey style, like, shook my hand and we let him dance on stage for a bit. We do find, like, people coming to our shows just to start with me as well.
Oh, yeah.
One of the support bands in Sheffield, when they got announced for support, they basically said all over the internet they're going to come and find me and stab me.
Nice boys.
So, yeah, watch your space. This might be the end of Brother right now.
Do things like that never make you think, maybe I should pause a little bit before I speak?
No, I think all of my heroes, I imagine, got all this. You know, Morrissey must have got way worse than this. If you do, if you doubt, if you say that you won't, I'm still here. Watching you from afar, would you say if you don't, that's okay.
For all that people think that you're extraordinarily confrontational, you seem like very obliging. I remember when I interviewed you at the Red Cow in Slough, later in the day after I'd left, I believe the landlord roped you into playing a Christmas gig there.
Yeah. And we did it.
And we did.
It was amazing.
It was really good.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Now, for the benefit of listeners, the Red Cow is a pub on a roundabout in Slough that is not a suitable gig venue by any stretch of the imagination.
No. It wasn't.
We had to move the pool table out of the way.
It was so good.
Various slot machines as well.
The biggest changeover in 30 years.
Yeah. There was crowd surfing for the first time ever in the Red Cow.
How do you think, given how much press you've had, how do you think it's possible for you to surprise people in the time between now and your album coming out, which is in June, isn't it?
Yeah, July 4th.
Right.
Yeah, just the end of June. I think it will surprise people that we've actually got songs and that we're actually a band. And I think it will surprise them even more that they're pretty good. It's tough because of all the press we've been getting, I think people are trying to overlook us and it's cool to hate us.
I think another thing that will surprise people is that we actually don't sound like Oasis.
Yeah.
We're not the next Oasis.
No.
So yeah, when people hear the record, they'll know, they'll realise that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking forward to. Don't, if you say that you won't, I'm still here watching you from afar. Would you say if you don't, that's okay? I'm still here watching you from afar, watching you from afar, watching.
Brother, they're going to surprise people by the fact that they have songs and they are a band. They're going to surprise anybody who thinks they're a Crown Green bowling team. interesting interview, I thought. First of all, I must put out, I don't think Soul Family Sensation from Slough. I think they might be from Windsor. but nonetheless, what do we make of that? I mean, they sounded like slightly chastened to me.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the sort of swaggering braggadocio that we have come to associate
no,
with.
No, I was expecting, you know, an element of charisma, you know, not necessarily huge lashings of charisma, but an element of charisma. And some, you know, entertaining quotes, but they seem just quite
pleasant home counties
boys.
Yes,
yeah,
really.
not what I was expecting at all,
but
actually.
But that's not a bad thing.
No, there's nothing
wrong with being a pleasant
it's
home counties
boy.
It's
a boring thing.
To be fair, though, the interview was about why people think they're shit.
Yeah, it was.
There's not a lot.
Did either of you find, as they suggested, that their honesty in that interview was too intense for you?
You know that saying, the kind of face only a mother could love? Mm. I felt slightly sad when they applied that to their music, saying, well, mum's like it.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, do we like their music? I mean, this is something that seems, I mean, the point I think that Michael was trying to make in the interview is that the music has been slightly overlooked.
They haven't had a lot of music out, though, yet, have they?
No, but that doesn't stop people finding it. I mean, surely there must be. Yeah, it must be able to find it on the internet, surely. That's what young people do, isn't it?
Yeah, there's lots of YouTube kind of clips. I remember when, I think I was on the show kind of earlier on in the year, that we were talking a bit about Brother, because I think we were talking about the vaccines. And, yeah, there's lots of little clips, and obviously people have uploaded kind of gig stuff. But
there's sort of a perception already that they've kind of failed, Brother.
Yeah.
Because the singles didn't chart particularly highly, da 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 da.
But neither did the first couple of singles by most bands, you know.
No, well, exactly, absolutely. But there's this sort of perception that your singles to skyrocket into the charts or else you're kind of done for. And I think it's interesting what you were saying about the vaccines, because people went, oh, that's not going to be, you know, a huge hit. It sounds like, myself included, you know, it sounds like a C86 band, da-da-da. But it's still hanging about the album charts. They clearly have a following, you know, it's going to continue. Do you think sort of Brother have a kind of done for, Rebecca? Do you think that people are going to get into it? Do you think it's going to be a long-lasting thing?
It's not my cup of tea.
That's not what I asked you.
I thought that was an interesting point about whether there is a kind of snobbery in the capital about these sorts of things, because it's, you know, you've got bands like the Cortinas who are huge, and I don't think they're very pleasant, but I can see that they work, and especially in a live setting. I think that's what he was saying about the vaccines as well, doing very well in a live setting. Mm. People are going to see them singing along to every word. So I don't know. I haven't heard enough of their songs to form a lasting opinion, and I've not seen them live because I don't really want to. But that single that they had out, Darling Buds of May, wasn't very good.
It's not for me either. I mean, there's an interesting point here that maybe, I was thinking about this recently, maybe the audience that Brother are supposed to appeal to has sort of ceased to exist, because the BDI album hasn't really done particularly well, or certainly not the way, you know, the BDI singles didn't do anything at all, which is nuts when you consider that basically, you know, Oasis fans were kind of diehard people that it appeared would buy any old cobblers.
What? I quite like about half of that record.
Yeah, I thought some of it was all right.
One thing about Brother in general, I think there's this inherent inbuilt hypocrisy in the press that, and this is not just The Guardian, obviously lots of other places, where, you know, we're looking for a new gang to fill kind of the gap that whatever bands have left. We're looking for this kind of glamorous gang, and we create them and we do all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's not the build them up to knock them down kind of attitude isn't new at all. But I think now we're kind of almost saying, here are a gang, but they're terrible before they've even done anything. I think it is very unfair.
Do you think bands would... It's interesting because I was thinking about that band Woo Life, and... they seem quite good. I don't mean to sound surprised that a new band are good. That was it. But they don't do any press at all. They haven't done any press at all. They are really going for kind of a heavy, mystique sort of angle. The videos that are up on YouTube are pretty weird. The music is quite opaque in its own way. Is that a better way of tackling it than just going, no interviews? Because what you can't do then is get plastered on the front of the NME before you've put a record out, and therefore people assume if your single goes in the charts at number 28, you've failed.
Well, people are very savvy about how the media works and how interviews work and how sound bites work and things like that. I think people are just tired of it, just some mouthy boy saying, my band's brilliant.
Yeah.
I think what's really changed the whole idea of what a band should be are the Arctic Monkeys, really, because there was no hype driven by the press at all. It was completely driven by fans, you know, in the outside world.
Big up, they did have quite a lot.
No, but kind of very in the early 2000.
It seemed more organic. It seemed like those big articles were a response to something happening rather than an attempt to make
something happen. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what I mean. Yeah.
But then Arctic Monkeys new single, in the chart at number 28 with a bullet.
Oh, really? I think, you know...
There's a soft release and all that kind of thing, but still...
Yeah. Single they've been Josh-hommed, though, haven't they?
They've been Josh-hommed within an inch of their life. The last two singles off their albums, The Arctic Monkeys, got to number 90 and number 94. So that's what I mean about that sort of...
being Josh-hommed, and I just can't think of anything else. I'm lost in a reverie.
lots of ladies would like to be Josh-hommed. But I'm just wondering if that kind of lad... market has kind of collapsed a bit. If the Arctic Monkeys aren't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they've gone off them, they're not really buying BDI records anymore. It's like, you know, these sort of blows.
But what should be interesting to see is how, as Rebecca was saying, how this stuff translates live. You know, I'm sure the BDI gigs will be, you know, coming up will be
fucking amazing. Like, brilliant in person. It's like in the studio, isn't it?
It's like he's possessed you.
Yeah. Imagine that. Now I'm lost in a reverie, possessed by Lady Gaga. So yeah, it's an interesting state of affairs. I'll be intrigued to see how the album does.
Definitely.
I'll be intrigued to see, you know, because like I said, I've got a feeling that Vaccines album is going to end up doing really well, and I think they are a tougher and sort of more robust proposition than I initially thought.
Yeah,
and my 4-year-old loves them. Yeah. Vaccines, it's absolutely remarkable. But I mean,
fancy and fun though. I can
and you sort of think, well, actually, maybe you've overanalyzed this band a little bit too much, and maybe it's just like really direct pop music, and you didn't notice because you were too busy comparing it to the Groove Farm. Or
when I first heard Wrecking Ball, I just thought it sounds like a nursery rhyme.
Well, yeah, really, there you go. Esme Petridis, age 4, she agrees with you. Let's leave it there. Still here. Brother's next single is called "Still Here." Brilliant. The amazingly named Still Here, Brother's next single, is out on May the 8th. They're touring all over the place. Their dates are at acidlove.net. Acid Love, all one word. Let's review some new music now in Singles Club. We're going to listen to three tracks, one from each of us. So let's start with Jude's choice. That's Danger Mouse with Danielle Lupi and Nora Jones. That's Black, the track is called. Jude, that's your choice.
Yeah, I thought I'd bring this in for a couple of reasons. I had the album hanging around my house, and I've always enjoyed Danger Mouse's various projects.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I thought, you know, this will probably chime with me because it's influenced by Ennio Morricone, Daniel Lupi. He's an Italian composer that I'd never heard of before. He hasn't done a great deal of stuff. He's not hugely famous, but him and Danger Mouse have been kind of wandering around Italy for 5 years trying to find bits of old soundtrack music, old composers to kind of get the rights for various things, trying to find a date. I was listening to an interview yesterday that Danger Mouse and Daniel Lupi were doing on Six Music. They've basically been travelling around bits of Italy trying to meet old composers to find old instruments, find old kind of songs, to develop this kind of idea for this record. Now, the record is you know, it's very nice. I really like this song particularly, although it does remind me a bit of, do you remember Dean Wareham and Britta Phillips records? Dean Wareham from Galaxy 500.
Yeah.
It's got this kind of similar feel about it. I wonder if they've heard that, because not that many people did. However, what I really like about it is it's the continuing, I wouldn't say rebranding of Norah Jones, but kind of, I really like Norah Jones. I really like her voice.
Yeah.
And this is probably revealing that I was a terrible snob when, you know, she was having the biggest selling record in the world. But there's something about her voice I really like. She sounds a bit drunk on this record, which I like. Always like that, the vocalist.
Yeah.
Pissed,
yeah.
And Jack White's involved in this record quite heavily as well. He sings on quite a few of the tracks. And that's kind of an interesting combination in itself.
Jack White's involved in everything.
Yeah, he basically is, yeah. Finger in every pie.
Rebecca, are you a fan? Are you a Danger Mouse fan generally? Are you a fan of this record?
I interviewed Danger Mouse many years ago, and he was really, really miserable.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would he say it?
I just found him very grumpy. He wasn't a cheerful man. But I
has
think
that clouded
that,
your so perception of
so
this
basically
record?
I can't review this.
Yeah. Did you just put it on and go, oh, that miserable bastard, yeah, and take it off again?
Miserable. But I think he's very serious, and so then I was imagining his 5-year trip around Italy to find obscure instruments. I bet that was a laugh. Oh,
yeah.
I had to go with him. But yeah, personal issues with Danger
Mouse. Might have been
aside.
Amazing. He might have stopped off. He might have had a lot of gelati, limoncello.
You never know. I think he is very serious and very dedicated to what he does. I thought this was quite pleasant.
Nothing wrong with that.
I'm not saying,
I prefer what I mean. I prefer to listen to records by people who are just like dicking about.
Sometimes
nobody's
I do.
He's a proper crate digger, isn't he? You can imagine being
I once met DJ Shadow, and he is a similarly, you know, serious-minded character. Yes,
yeah.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. I thought it was very nice. I quite like Norah Jones' voice as well. I don't think it's quite as soft and bland as people think it is.
Yeah. It's got a huskiness to it, which I really like.
Yeah. This whole song, though, hasn't really grabbed me yet. I feel a bit like it's... you know, so I don't know if you watched Boardwalk Empire, but it was that kind of thing where it was all very well done and very well put together.
Yeah.
And it was very expensive and it was quite good, but there was just something really finished about it that actually detracted from the end product.
I see. No, I don't mean too polished. Interesting. Interesting state of affairs. It's part of a concept album, isn't it? Is there some sort of concept album thing going
on?
Yeah,
it's their...
is it called Rome?
It's called Rome, and it's them trying to bring together all these... you know, different ideas. They say it's a concept album, but I can't go and work what the concept is. And they're trying to sound a bit
like
Ennio
most concept anyway. Albums. A lot of Ennio Morricone around at the moment, isn't there? That Cat's Eyes record. Seems to be quite sort of heavily influenced by that sort of thing. For anybody who's interested further, let's hope he's in a better mood than when he met you. Because Danger Mouse.
2005.
Yeah, let's hope he's cheered up in the intervening 6 years. We'll be speaking to Danger Mouse and Daniel Lupi on the programme in a few weeks' time. Okay, so that's out today. You can download that that track right now. I think it's available to download. Next up is My Choice. That's My Choice. That's Fleet Foxes, track from their new album, Helplessness Blues. That's called Lorelei. I like Fleet Foxes. I like Fleet Foxes a lot. But I'm not like one of these massive music press, you know, rock critic fans of Fleet Foxes. There's certain aspects of what they do that I've seen them live and they're absolutely brilliant. There's still certain aspects of what they do that sort of gets on my wick a bit. The sort of the whole ye olde medieval banqueting experience aspect of what they do. You know, there's certain songs you just think, yeah, and after this, the jester's coming on, and then there's going to be the jousting. The sort of degree of reverence in which they're held, it gets on my tits. the sense that what they're doing is unbelievably honest, unadorned thing, you know, and it isn't in any way contrived. That's a nonsense. I don't see why, just because you've got a beard, that makes your music any more or less contrived than anybody else's. And obviously, if you're writing songs that are all, you know, full of archaic language and stuff like that, that's a contrivance, you know? So all these things get on my nerves about Fleet Foxes. A lot of that, you know, isn't really their fault. It's more to do with the way that they're kind of perceived and held up, I think. However, the new Fleet Fox album is really good. Strip away all that stuff. Strip away some of the slightly ponderous lyrics on it. There's one song that's like, why does the sun revolve, the earth revolve around the sun? You know, all this kind of thing. It's like, oh, shut up, Fotherington Thomas. Strip that all away. You have some really genuinely amazing music. I mean, beautifully written songs. Amazing use of kind of harmony vocals. I mean, brilliant kind of... They use them not to adorn the sort of songs. It's not like decoration. It actually drives the music along the way they use their voices, and I think that's sort of incredible. It's a really, really good record, and this is my favourite track on it. Bob Dylan fans among you will probably recognise this as basically a rewrite of Fourth Time Around off Blonde on Blonde, but lavishly reupholstered with their vocals, and I think with all the sort of bitterness and sarcasm of that song removed, and the sort of desperate kind of... heart-stopping yearning.
I like a bit of bitterness, though.
Do you? Yeah.
Yes, I do.
So I really like it, you know, and I think there's something about, when they're good, Fleet Fox, it bulldozes every single one of my kind of objections to what they do. Rebecca?
Well, I have to confess, I previously thought they were a bit folk moaner-ish.
Mm. Lots to be said for that, yeah.
Yeah, but this is very pleasant. I do like a waltz on, yeah. At the best
I like songs in waltz time as well, yeah. Actually. I've got a bit of a thing for
something nice about it. What you were saying about the layers of the vocals and things like that, that's quite intense in a way. It's sort of beautiful, but also quite full on. I did think it's not the sort of thing you'd want to necessarily listen to with a hangover, because there's so much. Even though it's very pretty, it's just like, it's a bit full on.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair point. Jude?
Yeah, that's true, actually. I hadn't thought of that. It's like stadium folk rock, isn't it? It's like, rawr, yeah. It's quite intense. It's funny, I really liked their first album when it came out, and then I saw them live. I got quite bored. Really? I think I'm the only person in the world who's seen them and has gone, oh my God. I went with one of my best friends who loved them to bits, and it's in the Roundhouse, which is a great place to see bands.
Yeah,
and a band like that, I thought they were going to be amazing. But I just found my mind drifting off, and I just wanted a bit of, as I was saying, bitterness or a bit.
No.
They're very lovely, and
they're not very charismatic on stage. I've seen them twice, and the first time I saw them was at Audio in Brighton, which is a venue without a stage. It was absolutely rammed. With the net result, you couldn't see Fleet Fox at all, but you could just hear these incredible, I mean, just note perfect, amazing vocals. Then I saw them at Glastonbury, and it just didn't connect at all.
Really?
You would have thought, middle of the afternoon, really hot summer's day at Glastonbury, and there was something, it was like there was a sheet of perspex between them and the audience. They just didn't...
Yeah, I felt like that with me. You know, I've always liked masked voices. I always have. And I think seeing Fleet Foxes and expecting to have this reaction to it after seeing Arcade Fire, for instance, who, when they sing all together, they sound like, you know, they're not perfectly in tune with each other. It's a bit kind of like they're hollering rather than singing.
Yeah.
And there's that kind of, you know, and Wynn Butler looks like he could probably kill you, which is, you know, and I'm sure with a few interviewers has wanted to.
My experience with
him suggested. Yes, me too. But there's that kind of slight...
He was a miserable sod, wasn't he? We're talking about Danger Mouse. Mm-hmm. God almighty, he was a miserable bugger when I met him.
I haven't known somebody who's interviewed him recently. He said he was really pleasant.
Yes, I've heard this as well.
Got happier.
Dorian Lynskey.
All right.
When interviewed him, said he was...
Rob Fitzpatrick also of this parish.
Maybe he's lightened up. Maybe it's that new haircut he's got.
Maybe he just didn't like us.
I fail to see how anybody could dislike us, Jude. Carry on anyway, but you didn't find that kind of emotional connection?
Yeah, no, I didn't. And I always, you know, music that is that, you know, beautiful, I kind of find that difficult sometimes. Although, you know, with that track, yes, there is that kind of intensity about the masked voices there. It is, you know, I really like that, actually. I've heard it three times. I have a little voice fighting inside me going, you're not going to like it after a while, but I'm telling that voice to shut up because I'm quite enjoying it at the moment.
It's my favourite track off the album, I think. It's probably the most straightforward track on the album. Mm. It's quite sort of episodic and slightly proggy, influenced by Roy Harper's Stormcock, if you know.
Really?
That's the big influence on it. What's 12-string guitar and all that kind of thing. So, that's on the new Fleet Foxes album, Helplessness Blues, which is out on Monday. No, it's out actually a week on Monday, but frankly, there's no point in lying about this. It's been leaked left, right, and centre. Just type the name of the band and the track into Google, and you will find it. Okay, last track this week is from Rebecca. That's Lose It by Austra. Rebecca, that's your choice. Tell us. We've had Austra actually on Singles Club before. I think Tim Jones brought an earlier single.
Was it The Beat and the Pulse?
Yes.
Yeah. This is the new single. I got the album Feel It Break last week, mm-hmm, and have been playing it quite obsessively. This isn't my favourite song from the album, but this is the new single, so I thought I'd be polite. And,
that's very nice of you.
Yeah, and say, this one, I'm quite intrigued by Austra. It's a band, but I think it's mostly pegged around the singer, Katie.
Yeah.
He seems to have quite an operatic background, which you can hear in the song.
You certainly can, yeah. It's got a little hint of the... What is it? What bank is it that has that advert?
This is what I was trying to think.
Yeah. There, for the journey.
That's the one.
Lloyd's TSB. Yeah, it has a hint of the Lloyd's TSB advert about it. There you go. Domino Records, there's your poster quote. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I think she's quite an interesting one in the credibility stakes, because a lot of people are going crazy for what they're doing, but because it's on Domino, obviously, mm-hmm, very cool. She's Canadian, which somehow seems
that's
to bring
cool
some sort of cool to it as well.
A lot of cool Canadians out there.
To me, it just kind of sounds like Florence and the Machine with a keyboard, which I quite like.
Interesting,
those
you say
aspects.
That. No, because you said that and that's like quite a damning, in some ways.
I don't mean it in a damning
thing,
way. I really
and
like
you see
it
that as a positive.
But I'm intrigued that a lot of people, I can imagine a lot of people saying they like this, slagging off Florence. In fact, I know people who have quite viciously slagged off Florence in the past, mm, and yet really like this.
No. I'm vicious. I'm not a fan of Florence, really.
No. But it was after Glastonbury last year, which is an inescapable bloody presence doing You Got the Love every time you turn around. There's one moment where I was like trying to feel my way to the lavatory in Glastonbury in the middle of the night. I thought, I'm going to open this door and that woman's going to be behind it singing You Got the Love. Because frankly, she's been everywhere else at this festival. Anyway, sorry. Jude, what do you make of
Well, I really like that, even though I don't like Florence and the Machine. I think more because I'm not going to talk about Florence, but I just something about her vocal just rubs me up the wrong way, always has. But I can see the similarities with this. Again, I was thinking of Cat's Eyes, who Alexis and I seem to talk about all the time
operatic,
when we meet. Yeah, operatic. But, you know, obviously the music is
having a moment.
Opera is the new rock and roll.
It's
the
grand
new brother.
If brother had gone opera.
That'd be amazing. You can say this about Cat's Eyes as well. There's a slight sort of gothiness.
Yeah.
Going on here, goth pop. Goth is big. The goth is really, really back,
although,
isn't it?
Cat's Eyes were insistent that they weren't goth when I interviewed them recently. That was,
really?
Yeah, that was their main point that they were trying to make, that they definitely weren't goth.
Well,
it's not helping dressing in black, is
this
it?
Yeah. It was a beautiful sunny day and he was head to toe in black. So,
yeah.
I'm not a goth. You look a bit like one.
I interviewed the guy out of Salem at the end of last year and he was going, I don't even know what goth music is, man. I don't know why anybody would think we were goths. And I was like, it's because you're called Salem and you've got a picture of a burning cross on the front of your record. You don't want to be, you don't want people to think you're goths. Don't do that. But there is definitely a sort of a hint. There's definitely a hint of goth. There's a whiff of patchouli in the air. There's a whiff of Kensington Market circa 1987 in the air.
Yeah, but that's a lot more synth pop to me, that kind of track.
Gothy synth pop. Goth pop. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I love a bit of that.
Excellent.
Why not?
Yeah, no, totally.
Perfect for a sunny day.
What, goth pop?
No.
No, it's interesting. I don't know what I made of that, to be honest with you. I Britain's top rock critic. I don't really know how I thought of it. I sort of like the idea. I got the album, I kind of liked the idea of it, and then I put it on, I'm not so sure about this. There's something about it just didn't quite grab me. Maybe it's the sort of operatic ness.
The Lloyd's TSB bit.
It's the Lloyd's TSB advert. Yeah, it makes me want to go and take out an overdraft. But no, there's just something about it that didn't quite grab me. I remained you know, it's perhaps the record I need to give more time to or something like that. That was just something about it didn't quite stir me in the way that I had hoped. I think maybe it was the slight poppiness of it. I thought I was going, because the way the record is presented, sort of gloomy sort of black and white photographs.
I think it might have the triangle on the sleeve that is very fashionable. Again, opera and a triangle.
Wow. Yeah. What's that? What's that? What are you talking about?
There are triangles everywhere. This sounds like I'm about to unveil some magic.
Yeah, thank you, David
Icke. Like foil helmet.
There are triangles everywhere.
Having a triangle on your artwork, I think it's a chill wave thing. I might have just made all of this up.
Wow.
But triangles seem to be very popular.
Lots of geometric shapes. I've noticed that. I've noticed that.
Well, maybe Brother will have a big triangle on the cover of their record.
Play
amazing. I had no idea.
Is new it Age like, is coming back. That's what it is. Chill Wave is just New Age.
Do you think it might be Masonic?
Maybe. That's
because I read a thing that someone said when, I mean, obviously, a lunatic had written this, had said that
Did you just point at me when you
No. I was just looking at you. I wasn't suggesting. Had said that when Jay-Z, as is his wont, live, encourages you to throw your diamonds, thus for the benefit of listeners I'm now throwing my diamond, that was an ancient Masonic symbol and the Illuminati were basically going to come and get you if you did it. So there you go. Anyway, Lose It by Astra. Alex, just that is that that's out now, is it?
In a couple of weeks.
Okay. Some thoughts, moving swiftly on last week's review choices. Wiley was most talked about on the blog last week, loved and loathed in equal measure, with Dave Portivo comparing it to Dan the Sack and Scroobius Pip. Not a good thing in his opinion, while Laronio One loved it. Elsewhere, lots of chatter about Record Store Day and that it should be called Record Shop Day. I agree.
Yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree. This is the creeping Americanization. This is what Blur were warning us would happen in the mid-90s. This is the creeping Americanization of our nation. Cowpat felt the whole thing turned his stomach. It would be amazing if he had actually been called Cowpat. Someone I know is threatening to give their newborn daughter the middle name Pigfight.
Pigfight? Oh, my God.
Absolutely incredible. Finally, a hello to the monkey, that's not very politically correct, who's been catching up on all the programmes since May 2009 and has only just been enjoying Chad and Jeremy, Bob Lind, our Motown programme, and the Indie Professor. Though he suggests Ron Geeson should have got a mention when we were talking about Ghostbox Records. He's absolutely
yes,
right.
Yes, Ron Geeson is amazing. I spent an afternoon in his shed.
It's a life of surprises, isn't
it? Ron Geeson has an album out now called Ron Cycle.
Really?
It's brilliant.
Is it really
it's
good?
Completely bonkers. I love it. He lives in Wadhurst, somewhere down in is it Sussex?
Okay.
And has a shed that is full of incredible analog equipment that he's picked up over the years, including one of the original Fairlight.
Wow.
Which, if nobody knows them, is kind of one of
the first
defining
sampling,
kind of sample synthesizers. And I had to go at it. He also has a collection of adjustable spanners from around the world.
Amazing.
He's a lovely, lovely man.
Why does he have a collection of adjustable spanners?
He's just into them. He likes weird old stuff, but he's a very pleasant man. And he was very involved with Pink Floyd in the early days.
He appears on Atom Heart Mother and he made a record with Roger Waters.
Yeah, he also made a record just made of human body sounds.
Wow.
Yeah, I wrote an article for the Guardian several years ago about library music, in which Ron Geeson was interviewed by me in his shed.
Amazing.
So check that out online. I would.
On the subject of people with amazing collections, you know Johnny Trunk of Trunk Records?
Yes, I
He has
love
a collection
Johnny.
Of vintage Durex signs, which were dotted about his living room. He said there were he noticed lots of barbers, old-fashioned barbers were closing down. He'd just go in and go, do you want that? Because they'd have, you know, a sort of neon Durex sign. And when I went to his house, this is about 10 years ago, he had about 15 like lit up Durex signs in his living room.
Oh, amazing. Just,
everywhere you look, Durex.
That's a photograph, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Or a Lady Gaga concert.
But so, yes, consider, Ron Geeson, consider, I think actually there is a track on Ghostbox, possibly by the Advisory Circle, called Everyday Science for Ron Geeson.
Ron Geeson,
isn't
there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he did lots of library music.
He did. So there you go. So, yes, we've taken that into account. Thanks for the comments this week and the retweets. You can follow us at Guardian Music Weekly Pod, or one word. Or you can leave a longer comment on the blog at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. And that is it, ladies and gentlemen, for this week. Thanks for listening this week. Thanks to Jude and Rebecca for coming in. Lovely to see you.
Thank you.
I'll be back next week when we'll it's just when we'll be hanging the flags out for the royal wedding. Not really. I'm Alexis Petridis. The programme was produced by Scott Cawley. See you then. Bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.